The Hebrew Order of David is one of our community's oldest and most established global outreach organizations. Join Stan Claff for the next hour as he explores the issues facing the men in the community. The HOD Hour is a fundraising initiative for the HOD. Welcome to the HOD Hour with Stan Claff. This is the HOD Hour with Stan Claff.
And good evening, and I'm Stan Claff, and tonight we are going to talk to Sharon Claff, who's in London. She's a, obviously she's a cousin, family. She's active in combating replacement ideology and anti-Semitism. She's also the founder member of Campaign for Truth, the grassroots group established in 2009 and affiliated with Eye on Anti-Semitism, monitoring anti-Semitism on social media. And it's most fortuitous that we should be talking today because today's the day of the of Holocaust, of opening and finding Auschwitz, and so 75 years on, and still anti-Semitism is prevalent, and it's today we're connecting. So hello, Sharon.
Hi, Stan. How are you?
Wonderful, and you? Sorry about that little bit of a stumbling opening, and my mind was thinking about how best to describe the day of the of Auschwitz and the fact that it's getting worldwide attention. A large number of people, of dignitaries coming to Israel, to honor the day. I wouldn't say celebrate, but to honor the day, and headed by such dignitaries as Mike Pence, who used the opportunity to say a few words, of course, about Iran and the problems that they're having there and slightly politicized it. But for the main, the focus is definitely on anti-Semitism. I think also Bibi Netanyahu also used the day for a little bit of politicization. But we're going to talk about generally about anti-Semitism. And Sharon is active in England. In fact, she's an ex-South African, but she's become a British bulldog. She's got her teeth into this anti-Semitism. And she is fighting it on all fronts. And you can see the result of that kind of exercise when you look at the outcome of the elections when Jeremy Corbyn was so soundly thumped. And I guess that anti-Semitism played a big role in turning people against the Labour Party. What do you say?
I think, Stan, can you hear an echo?
Yes, there's an echo.
Okay, I'm looking for earphones. I'm just hoping I can find my earphones because that'll go if I can plug them in.
Okay. I
can you hear me?
I can hear an echo, but I'm hearing you twice as well.
But I hope your listeners are not listening to an echo.
Okay, we're going to check on the technology.
Can you check on that?
Working? Yes.
And I'm just running around while I'm talking to you looking for my earphones that I seem to have lost somewhere. But anyway, yes, I think there was a lot of effort put into making sure that the electorate knew what was going on with Corbyn and anti-Semitism and so on. So a lot of people had a lot of input. I think you might hear that certain groups will say, oh, we did it and we did all the work. But I think every person involved, every person who cared about racism actually had an input here with anti-Semitism. And bringing to awareness what Jeremy Corbyn was standing for. So it was a very anxious time, actually.
So now in the aftermath, now the leadership race is on, and those candidates who are putting themselves forward, are they really that far from the party core, or are they genuinely against the anti-Semitism story? Are they genuinely not following in the footsteps of Corbyn, or is this just the whole thing repeating itself?
Well, I've just been checking my facts here as I've been waiting for you to dial in, and I've been looking again through who is actually standing to be leader of the Labour Party. But before we go into the individuals, I think I'd like to just say that the Labour Party, although the anti-Semitism in the Labour Party is not yet dealt with, and there's still, we've got to be vigilant. I think the Labour Party is not going to be anything in major politics for a very long time. And I'm looking at the four contenders here. They I'm looking at Keir Starmer. Keir Starmer, as you know, used to be part of the CPS some years ago in 2015 or so, which is the Crown Prosecution Service. And he was part of the Labour Party now that stood for anti-Brexit. And I think he was key in creating this debacle of a Brexit policy that came out during the election. You may remember that the idea was that they would campaign during the election for a second referendum. If they came into power, they would have a second referendum that they would campaign against once they'd done the negotiation. They would negotiate with Europe, have their second referendum, and then they would campaign against their negotiations that they might have agreed with Europe. So it was a bit of a contradiction. Why bother to negotiate if you're going to tell people not to vote for it?
Right.
So that was Keir Starmer was at the back of that. So I'm not quite sure what the membership would think of that, because as far as I can recall, the Labour Party was always pro-Brexit. Jeremy Corbyn wasn't a staunch European.
Well, he seemed to flip-flop in the whole process because he couldn't quite come to terms with any of it. And I think his hesitancy and his way of actually not coming forward with anything really tangible, that must have been his downfall. I think that some of the members now who are standing forward, putting the names forward, are saying quite categorically that they tried to stop Jeremy when, you know, as far as all of this was concerned, and they weren't pro-Corbyn, etc. But still, you know, in the, there wasn't a really an all-out mutiny within the party. Now it seems to be coming out, but I suppose they were hanging on to the fact that they might still do better than they did.
I think they were hanging on, hoping that they would do better. I think they were hoping that that their base would stand true to them regardless. But the, one of the most encouraging things for me is to know that the average guy in the UK doesn't stand for racism. I'm not sure that Northern person who voted, who left Labour to vote so overwhelmingly for the Conservatives, really would have had a huge grasp on the kind of anti-Semitism that was taking place, because most of it is focused here in London and in pockets like Manchester and Liverpool and so on, but mostly in London. And I think what they did know is that they're not racist. And if there was any smattering of a hint of racism in their party, they weren't going to stand for it. And for me, that's the most encouraging thing, because they're really the people who swung the election.
Yes, absolutely.
And I think that's a very, very important thing to remember. And I think these people who want to be leaders of the Labour Party need to look into themselves, because firstly, they all remained in the Labour Party that is institutionally racist. They didn't leave. Many people left. They didn't leave. They stayed. Starmer, I'm not sure where he stands on anti-Semitism. I believe his wife is Jewish or was born Jewish. But I don't know what that makes of him and what he thinks about anti-Semitism. But he stayed there. He hasn't left. The next one is Rebecca Long Bailey. As far as I can recall, she's a staunch Corbyn supporter.
Yes, they were saying that she just wants to carry on where he left off.
Exactly. So she's a no-no for me. The other one is Lisa Nandy, who looks a little bit young and inexperienced. She worked in charitable organizations before she became an MP, which I think says a lot about where she's coming from and how she might deal with world crises. I'm not sure that she has the capability.
Sky News is saying that she's using the charm offensive to try and woo over people. So she's using her girlish charm to do this. But in fact, you know, they're doubting that there's much substance behind it.
That's my feeling. I mean, I don't know the lady. I've never really followed her very much. But that's my feeling, that she doesn't have what it takes. She's too girly. And my yardstick is, how would they sit around a table with Putin? What would happen? And I can't see her
breakfast
talking with Putin. And I can't see, what's the other one? Rebecca Long Bailey coping with Putin. I think he'd chew them up alive. And then I'm looking at Emily Thornberry. Now, Emily Thornberry first came to my attention when she made a speech about the march on Jerusalem. Do you remember that when they first started the riots at the Gaza border?
Yes.
And a pile of people got killed, and they put it forward that all these innocent civilians were killed. And she made it was a famous speech she made in the House of Commons. It went on for a long time. And she basically rushed to judgment, and he was accusing Israel of genocide and all sorts of things in the House of Commons.
Right. I remember that.
Do you remember that?
Yes.
Okay, so that's the lady. She rushes to judgment. She was a barrister, so I won't say too much about her because I would hate her to use her barrister skills on me.
Well, but I found
I didn't rate her.
She positions herself front and center right next to Corbyn during all the debates, and she has a very smug expression on her face, agreeing with the words that he says, and especially in the time, mainly a lot of the time when Theresa May was there, but I noticed it very prevalent when Johnson was talking, so she's nodding her head vehemently when Jeremy Corbyn is trying to say stuff, you know, against, because essentially the last few years have actually, the Labour Party, I think, is mainly behind it, but the Scottish Democratic, the SDP, is also doing that, and it's become a series of angry politics. I mean, when they stand up, they can't stand up and make a statement. It has to be accusatory and loud and pointing fingers type of politics, which I think also doesn't give you stature, you know.
Absolutely. The level of debate in the UK has degenerated to almost like a school person debate, maybe sibling arguments, rushing to judgments, not actually doing their homework properly, not trying to understand what's actually going on before they make a statement. It's like, get my voice heard because I want to be famous. And I think Emily Thornberry, for me, fits well into that category. And I think she would jump around in any direction to become leader of this very, very damaged Labour Party.
Yes.
Whilst we're talking, my personal view on a Labour Party is that there's no real place for a Labour Party in modern politics in the United Kingdom.
It definitely seems that way. It seems that they're, yeah. And especially amazingly, because one always sort of looked at the British and the English as being definitely those people who were, you know, blue collars and so on, were definitely Labour people. But they're not, I don't think they consider themselves that anymore.
No, I think that social media has become a great equalizer. It's given people a voice. It's made people realize that their thoughts are valid, that there will be somebody who will listen to what they've got to say. There's endless amounts of phone-in programs. There's lots of social media, Facebook, all of those apps and so on that people can link into and have their say. And so what you're seeing is that ordinary man is actually important. And the people who don't talk to these ordinary men, the people who think they can just knock on your door and dish you out a flyer at election time and then you'll never see them again, really must know that the guy in the street knows that his voice can be heard and he wants it to be heard. He wants to be listened to.
And they're not relying. I think you can't rely anymore on traditional family allegiances, because I think a lot of people whose families traditionally voted Labour, I think they went away from it. They must have, you can see by the result, they must have taken note of the situation. They must have felt these people are not serving what we want. And Boris Johnson, with all that he may be and his faults, and I'm actually a big fan, but I do see that he has his faults. He's a very charismatic politician.
Yeah. Boris took the trouble to travel around and meet ordinary people. He didn't sit on high and be aloof from the guy that he wanted to talk to. He spoke to ordinary people, and I actually went once on the hustings when he was campaigning for mayor of London. I went on the hustings and I met him, and he's actually very nice. He's humble. He's not as arrogant as people like to say he is, and clearly he's ambitious. He wanted to be prime minister.
Sure.
And Just hold on, somebody's calling me. I don't know if it's bothering you.
No, it's fine, so I'm going to just say that this
I'll just carry on.
This is the HRD Hour. This is Stan Claff. We're talking to Sharon Claff, who's, I want to call her an activist, but she's more than an activist. She's really immersed herself in the campaign against anti-Semitism in the United Kingdom. She's part of a grassroots group established in 2009, which is called Campaign for Truth, which is a campaign for the number four truth. If you want to look it up, it's affiliated with Eye on It, anti-Semitism, monitoring anti-Semitism on social media. If you want to join the conversation, you can send a telegram to 061-895-1019. You can SMS 34519. We'll answer any questions that you may have. Sharon has worked for many, many years that I can remember in this capacity to try and fight what is a growing tide of anti-Semitism. And it's, as I said at the beginning, this is a day to remember, because today we remember basically the relief of Auschwitz 75 years ago, and there's a celebration or a there's a ceremony going on in Israel with heads of state from all over, including Prince Charles, including Emmanuel Macron, who lost his cool yesterday with outside the church, and also such dignitaries as Mike Pence, who made a brilliant speech against anti-Semitism and really urging people to take the Trump line against Iran. So yeah, we're talking to Sharon Claff, and it's about anti-Semitism, which of course is the focus of the Hebrew Order of David and what we stand for. And that's why we want to try to get to the background of what went on in England over the elections, over Great Britain, or rather the United Kingdom, the loss of the United Party with, in part, due to their focus on anti-Semitism, or their anti-Semitism, which has been entrenched in that party and seems to have pervaded throughout, and we're not sure what the depth is now that things have changed and new leadership are being sought, and whether those leaders are actually going to continue the Corbyn tradition, or they're going to move away and try to woo back the Jews, and which I think is a mountain to climb. But we're talking to Sharon, and we were talking about the different leaders that are standing for the Labour Party. So can we continue from there?
Hi, I'm still here. I'm listening to you.
Okay.
okay. So yeah, I just to pick up on those people who want to be leader of the Labour Party. I don't rate any of them personally. I'm not sure that anybody serious does rate them. I think that the Labour Party is a bit of a spent force. We were talking about whether there's a space in a modern world for a Labour Party. And I don't think there is, not only because the sort of family line of traditional line of supporting a political party is breaking down. But I think that in a modern world, people know their rights. They know what they can do and what they can't do. They don't stay in jobs where they're being abused. They know that the law is on their side if they're women and they don't climb the ladder, and so on and so forth. So I think the whole idea of a Labour Party that wants to renationalize, that wants to introduce a Marxist state into a very successful United Kingdom, I think is a no-no, and it's a failing party, just as the Liberals failed 100 years ago.
So it's losing its relevance in society there.
Exactly. And I think you're seeing it not only here, you're seeing it in Israel, where the Labour Party is completely non-existent. I mean, a couple of people have stuck with it. But basically in Israel, the election is about right-wing and a little bit more right-wing. It's not really much to do with the Labour Party, and trade unions are anachronistic. We don't need to pay huge amounts of money to people to tell us what rights we have in labour law and so on. But I think also that the aspirations of the blue-collar worker has changed. His children have gone to university and become city workers. So I think this whole, you were talking about a tradition in a family, and I think this is being eroded because a lot of people who before didn't have an opportunity to climb the ladder of education and improvement in job prospects are now able to do that. There's no limit to the reach that you have as a person. So I think all of that's breaking down, and I think the Labour Party, instead of embracing it and moving forward with it, has actually gone back. They've gone back to a whole Marxist ideology, and that whole manifesto was rejected. And the problem with these four contenders is usually when a party loses, particularly as overwhelmingly as this Labour Party has lost, the new contenders for leadership would change completely how they might want to run the party, what their manifesto is, what the outlook is for the future. But these four contenders have stuck with it. They've stuck with the rotten egg, basically. You know, they're stuck with a policy that the electorate overwhelmingly rejected. They're stuck with a policy that didn't really deal with anti-Semitism. And I can't see that there's a space for them in politics, and it's dangerous because we don't have an opposition. There's no real opposition in this country anymore.
But right now you don't want an opposition. Now, right now you want to move away from the whole story around Brexit. Hopefully all of it will fall into place in a week or two. And that will change the dynamic of the parliament, because that's all they focused on for the last few years. Now they can concentrate on what really needs to be done. Well, I'm hoping that that's the case.
I think you're absolutely right, but I think there's always a place for a healthy opposition. That's what holds government to account. That's what stops a very popular government from becoming totalitarian. You need to have that debate. You need to have an opposition that can actually have a mature debate in parliament when they're making policy. And I think, okay, in the short term, it doesn't matter because, as you say, it doesn't really matter at the moment because we've got to get through Brexit. That's a couple of weeks' time, and then there's a negotiation for the trade deals and so on. But in the long run, we have to have an opposition, and I don't see a space in our politics for an opposition. I don't see anybody rising to say, okay, I've got an alternative party that can actually serve as a real opposition. And that's because the current leaders in the Labour Party are the people who remained in a rotten party. The problem.
So now, with Brexit really happening, what is going to be the impact on Jews without the connection to the direct connection that they had with Europe? Is anything going to change, or is there going to be different kind of things? Are they going to blame the Jews for everything that goes wrong?
There's another call coming through, but I'm just going to ignore it. I think Brexit, and a lot of pro-Europe people seem to think the Jews are going to be affected if we leave Europe, but I can't see why. I can't see what will happen to Jews if we're in or out of Europe. I don't see the difference. If we're in or out of Europe, there may be a case to say that being out of Europe might affect the economy, and that affects everybody. Or immigration will be a problem, and that affects everybody. But I can't see specifically as a demographic group that whether we're in or out of Europe might be good or bad for Jews. I can't see that. I don't understand that argument. I think in the UK, Jews actually have a fairly healthy life, apart from the fear that we went through should Jeremy Corbyn become Prime Minister. That's the big problem. And anti-Semitism is a huge problem. It still is a big problem.
Still in England?
Yes, but I don't think it specifically relates to Brexit. I think a lot of it, if you go on social media, if you follow some of the more racist links on social media, you'll see that not only does working man have social media that gives him a voice, but racists also have that same voice now. They have an ability to say what they want, and they say it. If you go sort of searching through various links and groups and pages on Facebook and all sorts of Telegram and so on, you'll see that it's a free-for-all for people to say and think what they want. Now, I think I've said to you before that I'm not a great fan of defining hate. I'm also not a great fan of telling people that they can't hate. If they want to hate, they can hate. I can't make them love me. But what I want to say to people is that they're laws, that if you cause my life to be in danger, or you threaten me, or you don't give me a job because you hate me, then there are laws that I can use to bring you to book. But I'm not a great one for defining what hate is, because I think it's very difficult to find that line that crosses from hating somebody to say, no, you can't. You can't have this emotion. I don't believe you can decree what emotion people can have.
I don't think that you can try to fight anti-Semitism without trying to educate people. And I think that in the main, it's born out of ignorance rather than actual experience with Jews and having bad experience or whatever it could be. I'm sure there could be, it's like any other nation, there's always bad experiences. But in the main, what I found is that at the end of the day, it boils down to just sheer ignorance. They don't understand, you know, what it's all about. They don't understand why Jews stick together and have this history and rely on their history and rely on the shuls and everything that goes with it, to be able to really put up an argument. So, you know, it's aggressive, but it has no substance. That's really what has happened, I think, in the world today, is that we as Jews haven't done the PR to be able to put ourselves forward in that way. It's a fault of Israel. It's a fault, I think, generally with Jews around the world, that we don't have people who stand up and can make a cogent argument about the point, rather than to be aggressive and defensive in talking about it.
Well, I think when I think about the amount of anti-Semitism that is increased in the United Kingdom, I can only talk about here with any sort of direct knowledge. When I think about it, it's actually grown under the watch of our Jewish leadership.
It's grown.
And I know this. It's grown. In other words, what I'm saying is that our Jewish leadership has actually been very silent on anti-Semitism until, I would imagine, till a little way into Jeremy Corbyn's leadership. They were silent on anti-Semitism. They may have said one or two things here and there. But whilst this whole idea of transferring your hatred of Jews into your hatred of Zionists, the pretext, using it as a Zionism as a pretext for anti-Semitism, the Jewish leadership organizations here, the Board of Deputies, which is meant to be democratic and says it represents the Jews here, it actually grew on their watch. So I would say that our leadership hasn't done what it should have been doing. For instance, almost all of the Jeremy Corbyn stories and information came out of a blog of a friend of mine. Almost from 2007-08, we used to go to meetings, and this friend used to do the filming and write blogs about the meetings. And on his record are films of almost everything you read about Corbyn in the press comes out of that blog. And I remember in those days that the Board of Deputies paid no attention to what we were doing. In fact, some of them were saying that we were causing the anti-Semitism by going out on the streets and protesting and recording and watching what people like Corbyn, the activist, was doing with the Palestine Solidarity Campaign, with the Al-Quds Day marches. You know what Al-Quds is? Al-Quds is the Iranian march that Al-Quds meaning Jerusalem. So the Board of Deputies used to ignore us. They gave us no protection when we were being attacked, and they paid no attention to what we told them. And suddenly it came out after Corbyn became leader, because a few journalists got there, we were interested in a news story. So that's why it came out, and it came out of Richard Millett's blog. And so I blame a lot on the Board of Deputies particularly, and I'm looking here at their community briefing, and they've written a 10-point plan for the future Labour Party.
Why is it their job to do that?
Sorry?
Why is it their job to help the Labour Party?
Well, this is the question, is why do they have a 10-point plan for a Labour Party? Why aren't they representing all Jews, regardless of the politics, and making sure that any government that is elected into this country is aware of the requirements of Jews, the fate of Jews, and what's happening to Jews. This is their job. But they seem to think that they need to help the Labour Party formulate the policy. So they've got here to, I'll just go through them very quickly. Do you know about the 10 points?
No. We have our own community briefing from our Board of Deputies, but I haven't seen the 10-point plan.
You don't have 10 points?
I haven't seen one.
Okay, so these are the 10 points. They're pledges. They're 10 pledges to end the anti-Semitism crisis. Now, how long have you known about anti-Semitism?
Since I was born, I guess.
Your whole life. And your parents knew about it, and your parents' parents, and blah, 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 all the way back to David and Solomon and all the rest of them. So they're talking about 10 pledges to end the anti-Semitism crisis. So the first thing they're saying is that they can end anti-Semitism or a crisis, or as though this is a crisis and children wasn't a crisis.
They've got the magic bullet.
Yeah, so resolve outstanding cases. So what they're saying is the Labour Party has to attend to all the people who've been identified as anti-Semitism, and they need to bring that to a conclusion under a fixed timetable. Then they need to make the party's disciplinary process independent. Now, they're telling a party how to discipline their members. They must ensure transparency. They must prevent readmittance of prominent offenders. They must provide no platform for bigotry. That's, sorry, I've just lost it. Let me just get back there.
But these are all kind of things which are patently obvious. I mean, they should be if you're running a party.
They should be if you're running a party, but it's not, I don't think, for our Board of Deputies. The next one is to adopt the international definition of anti-Semitism without qualification, or they've adopted that. To deliver an anti-racism education program that has the buy-in of the Jewish community. So the Jewish community, I don't know what a buy-in is.
Well, that means they want the Jewish community to come and help them to overcome anti-Semitism. I mean, that just doesn't make sense at all.
Okay, and then engagement with the Jewish community to be made by its main representative groups. In other words, they can't engage with me because I'm not a main representative group. But they have to, in other words, they're making a little niche for themselves. Communicate with resolve, whatever that means. And then to show leadership and take responsibility, whatever that means. Okay, so this is their 10 points. And they're expecting whatever leader is to adhere to these 10 points.
So it still comes back to the question is whether, you know, what is their goal? Are they trying to cozy up to the Labour Party and to be part of that? Or are they just, shouldn't they be impartial to the parties and really just trying to do a lot of those things they should be doing themselves, like educating, et cetera, they should be doing themselves. Is not, and that is a fault, I think, generally, because what happens is the Jewish communities and these boards of deputies, I think they tend to hold back because they're only talking to their own people.
You've got it there.
you need to go out and talk to others, the outside world, and put yourself forward and, you know, have good PR and those kind of things, because people are not, They don't know, and that's out of ignorance that all of these things happen.
And of course, if you can't go out and represent anybody unless you know what's going on. And if you don't come out and see what's going on the streets of London when they have protests, if you're not there and you don't witness it, if you wait for me to write about it and then tell the world that Sharon is talking rubbish because you don't approve of me, then you can't actually resolve the problem. So
you've got to put it forward. And I think that also the thing with, I think people looking at protests, it's become so overwhelming around the world that I wonder if people aren't being turned off by it. You know, it leads to violence. There's always some problems. It doesn't bring the point home. The banners are all different and they put up banners which actually sometimes don't even make sense. You get the feeling that people have just been brought there for the sake of demonstrating, and really, you know, at the heart of heart, are they really, is it making a difference? I suppose to some extent it does, but I think overwhelmingly, I think people around the world are getting tired of it.
Well, look, the point is that there's, in a democracy, there's always room for protest. And at the moment, there's protest in a lot of places, not least in Hong Kong, where people feel that they're not being heard. So
protests about protests. I'll start a party for protests against protests.
but I think protests are healthy and they're important. And one of the things that is really happening now is with this whole climate change protest, they've actually taken the foot soldiers away from protesting against Jews and Israel. So at the moment, we're not seeing so many protests against Israel. So that's pretty good. I don't mind that. They can use them.
It's like Shakespeare said, they are dust protest too much.
Yeah. But I think protesting is healthy and people should be able to take to the streets. But as I said before, the technology has changed that. People don't always have to take to the streets. And more importantly, we're talking about the Labour Party and the elections and so on. I just wanted to say that I have every confidence that this current government is going to do the right things. There's something that Boris Johnson did straight away, and that was that he banned local authorities supporting the BDS in this country.
That's a big thing.
Now, it's huge. We've all been battling against BDS that have infiltrated every aspect of our society. So for me, for Boris doing that is just absolutely amazing. So that I give him all credit for that. And he was quite clear. He came out with it in the Queen's speech, and he said it again in Parliament, that there will be no place for BDS. The second thing he's done is that he's increasing the surveillance of terrorists. And he's bringing in a law that says that the severest of terrorists will not have parole. They will serve their sentence in full. And I think that is a good start. I think he is a man who's beginning to listen. He's got a lot to learn about terrorism and where it comes from. So that's a good thing. And the other thing he's done is with the Iran deal. He seems to be stepping away from it. And I'm very pleased about that, as you know. That our organization was probably the only protest against the Iran deal in this country. I don't think anybody, whether they were a political party or just a grassroots group like we are, actually protested the Iran deal.
Right.
And we did. And so I'm very pleased that Boris seems to be stepping back from it. And I think ultimately he'll probably support President Trump in his approach with Iran. I think what Trump has done with Iraq and Iran and the Soleimani thing has sent a message to the world. And I think we're going to see big changes this year. We're going to see big changes in terrorism. We're going to see big changes in Iran. I think Iran is going to, the Ayatollahs will be losing their grip. And I think that's very important. So I think this election is going to be very healthy, not only for the UK, but for UK-US relationship. And I think Europe is going to be dragged into that.
I think there's definitely a shift in the world, because 28 out of this 52 or 51 states in America, have come out against BDS in some form or another, made it against the law, etc. And that is very significant. I mean, it's the majority, and I'm sure that others will follow suit. And that is important, because you need that type of support to be able to really kick back. It's no good protesting if you're not getting results. And I think that the protests and the bringing it to attention of people, the world's beginning to realize that it's just a foolhardy exercise.
Well, the BDS is really very important, because BDS is now being called in an article I read today, it's being called the protest movement of the Palestinians.
Yes.
Okay, so it's not just a Western concept. It's now being used as their protest movement. And we know that the Palestinians are being used. The Palestinians are a weapon that's being used to delegitimize Israel. I know that there are a lot of so-called Palestinians who are anti-Israel. You and I have been to Israel, know that the majority of the people who live there are decent people and want to live together with the Jews. Most of them would opt to live in Israel and not in a new state called Palestine. So the politicizing of the idea of Palestinianism is being used in order to get rid of Al-Quds, to get rid of Israel, Jerusalem, get rid of Jews. This is the biggest problem today. And I was listening to the German president speaking in Jerusalem today, and I think he made a magnificent speech. I don't know if you heard it.
I didn't have a chance.
He made a fantastic speech. However, he spoke about the rise of the right being a danger today. And whilst the right is a problem, the right isn't the only problem. There's Islamic anti-Semitism that people still will not talk about. And that is a huge, huge problem. If they don't talk about it, they can't fix it. And the idea of Iran attacking Israel is the idea of getting rid of Jerusalem, the idea of Jews existing, because the Jews have not embraced the final prophet. So there's a bigger story, the backstory to the whole BDS movement and the whole idea of this anti-Semitism that's being missed. And I think that's all going to come out. It's going to come out in the wash this year.
That's the important thing that people need to know, because that's the education that people need to know where the world stands. Because if you don't put that forward, people just go on with their lives and are ignorant of what's happening, and there's no form of really activity against it. But if you get people leading the way, like the Boris Johnsons, like Trump, like the states in America, etc., it concerns me a lot that lots of especially French Jews are moving towards hedging their bets and opening, you know, buying places in Israel in case something happens. I think that scare tactics for people is a very negative effect on everything. It's good for Israel in one way, but it's bad for the world, you know, to have the Jews under pressure.
I think, Sam, you have to understand what's going on in France.
Sure.
In Paris particularly. You know the story of Halimi, the lady, the Holocaust survivor who was murdered.
Yes.
She was not only murdered, she was tortured. Now, she's just one story in an unfolding bank of stories that are coming out of Islamic attacks on Jews in Paris. The Jews who are leaving for a reason. And that's because there's a government in France that's not coming to terms with the Islamic anti-Semitism that's taking place in France. And if people like me speak about it, we are called racist. We're not allowed to speak about it. The most recent victim of the accusation of Islamophobia is Melanie Phillips. You know about Melanie Phillips?
No, only very slightly.
You've read her articles. Melanie Phillips was a left-wing British journalist, a Jewish British journalist, who over the years began to understand what was going on with Israel. She wrote a book called Londonistan some years ago. She's written many books. She's now considered a right-wing speaker. She understands the geopolitical story of the Middle East vis-a-vis Western democracy, and she writes about it. And the Board of Deputies in this country have now called her out as an Islamophobe. And I can tell you that Melanie is very considered in what she says. She's certainly not a racist, like me, like you. She's not anti-Muslim. She's not anti-human beings. But she does talk about ideology. And I think that the problem is when you say you need to educate people, it's very difficult to educate people when you can't talk about the problem.
Just give the name of that book again.
Londonistan.
L-U?
London.
Londonistan.
Londonistan, yeah.
Absolutely.
It must be about 5 years now that she wrote it. But I would recommend that anybody who wants to start understanding what's going on in Europe needs to read this book. And I don't think South Africa's far behind.
No, we've definitely had the invasion, and it is something which is problematic and growing. So yes, that for sure that is becoming an issue. I'm Stan Claff, and I'm talking to Sharon Claff, who's an activist living in England and fighting anti-Semitism. This is the Hebrew Order of David Hour. We come on every Thursday from 6 to 7. We talk about things relevant to Jews. The Hebrew Order of David is 115 going on 116-year-old organization, started in 1904. One of the pillars of what we stand for is, and we fight anti-Semitism wherever we can. We do it in a different way in that we try to do good. We try to raise funds and do acts of kindness in order to educate people, in order to show what we can do as Jews around the world. We have lodges right throughout America. That's in Atlanta, in Boca Raton, San Diego, Houston and Dallas, and in Canada. And we have lodges in Israel, in Jerusalem and Ranana. And we have lodges throughout South Africa in Cape Town, Port Elizabeth, East London, Durban and Johannesburg and Benoni, Sandton. And we are an organization. If you would like to join, or you can like to discuss or get involved in any of our projects, you can call us on 640-3017 on the code 011. Just one project which before we get to the end of the program and finalize with Sharon, one project which is coming up is a bingo evening on the 18th of May. Now, our bingo evening has the most fantastic prizes. We think the best prizes. We have big games. It's 200 rand a head. Come along and support it. The project is in favor or to assist Kosher Mobile Meals. We deliver food parcels to those in need all over the Johannesburg and the poorer areas, and Jews who are affected, families who are affected. So please come and support us. That's the 18th of May, 2020. And we're back with Sharon. We're just going to wrap up what we've been talking about the last hour, anti-Semitism. Of course, this subject is so large, but we focused mainly on the demise of the Labour Party, the rise of anti-Semitism, the rise and rise, I would say, of anti-Semitism. And we're discussing really how Brexit will affect Jews. And of course, it always impacts back on what if it's good for the Jews. And I suppose the Conservative Party has proved that it is good for the Jews because they voted for the Conservative Party, because I suppose that's how the Conservative Party got in. No, I'm joking. Probably a few other people voted as well. But we like to think that we had some influence. Right?
I have never known. I'm quite politically active, as you've gathered, and I'm a supporter of my local MP, Mike Freer, who is a Conservative member. I support him for two reasons. The first is I'm not a socialist, so I don't have any dilemma about not belonging to a Labour Party. I don't feel partyless because I would never belong to any kind of socialist party. And that's not because I'm a bigot, it's just I don't believe in socialism in the United Kingdom. So I've always been a supporter of my MP, and the second reason I support him is he's a damn good MP. He's always available, he helps you, he's kind, and he does his job. So I support him. But what I've seen this year, as opposed to the other years where I've sort of gone out stumping for him a bit, is the amount of people who actually came out were worried. They were so concerned that they came out and they stood for him. They did all sorts of things. They held evenings for discussions, and they called people in to tell them and to discuss and to give them information. It was quite amazing. And what happened in our area in particular, there's a Jewish MP from the Labour Party who was an MP in Liverpool called Luciana Berger, who left Liverpool, left the Labour Party because of anti-Semitism, very belatedly, I might add. And she came to London and decided to stand in the one constituency where we had a fantastic MP and a pro-Israel MP and a pro-Jewish MP. And so the local people here got quite angry with her for doing that, because she should have gone to an area, for instance, where Emily Thornberry was, and fight her own Labour Party that she felt that she had to leave.
I would support that. I'm not a fan of Emily.
There was a huge ruckus going on in the area between the two camps of people in my own street. We had her posters on one side of the street and mine on the other side of the street. There was a huge ruckus going on. And I'm proud to say that so many people came out and they stood with the Conservative Party against anti-Semitism. It was quite a relief that we won so overwhelmingly. Mike Freer, my MP, increased his vote by 5,000. which means he took a lot of votes off the Labour candidate, which was fantastic. So that atmosphere was here where a lot of the Jews were coming together to work together and support a common cause, which was to make sure that we didn't have an anti-Semitic government in this country.
And now, because you gave him such a good punt, he's going to even come in with a bigger majority next time.
I think so. I think, look, if he doesn't make any slips, and so far he's doing what Trump did. He's delivering. He's delivering on his promises. If he carries on like that, the Labour Party is going to be asleep for almost forever. There won't be a Labour Party.
It was time for a change. It was really time for a big change like this. So, okay, last minutes just to wrap up. Sharon, just tell us again a little bit about what you do besides going and standing on street corners and putting up posters and shouting about anti-Semitism, which you do very well, by the way, but I'm sure you have another life.
We hold events. We have speakers and we hold events. And some of them are very big and some of them are very small. Some of them are briefings of organizations that come from Israel and tell us what they're up to. This year our project is we've discovered that the Palestinian ambassador in this country for the Palestine mission is going into state secular schools and indoctrinating A-level students. So in other words, what's happening is that what they've done in the universities to indoctrinate the university students, they're now going into the schools. And the sad thing is that the teachers who are teaching in the schools are now the graduates from the universities who have been taught by the people, the lecturers who are anti-Israel, and they've taught them a replacement ideology. So those teachers are actually unaware of the truth because that's what they learned at university. So for instance, when I learned about Napoleon at school, I had to believe my teacher. I had no choice because I thought my teacher was going to teach me the truth. And now these teachers are teaching the students and they're bringing teacher exchanges from Palestinian Authority areas. And you're seeing students here, and A-level students in the UK being draped in Palestinian scarves with that kafir pattern on it that they use in the protests. And goodness knows what they're telling the students in the schools. So our project is to highlight this. So we've had two speakers so far. We've had Professor Richard Landis, who is a millennialist. You'll have to look that one up. And we've had an NGO monitor from Israel who monitors all the NGOs and their finances. And we're going to continue in that vein. We've written to the Home Secretary and we've asked her to stand in and deal with this Palestine mission here, which by the way has been shut down in America. Trump shut them down. He also, this man, Ambassador Zomlot, is a persona non grata in America. Their visas were taken away.
Right.
And here he sits in the UK indoctrinating our children. So that's our project for the year.
Okay, so we're coming to the end of the program. Thabo Mangeni, who helps with the running of the show, is giving me rude signals. And we're gonna wish you, may the force be with you. And we wish everybody a good Shabbos and thanks for listening to the Hebrew Order of David, the HAD Hour, on every week on Thursday nights from 6 to 7. Thank you.